You beautiful bastards, hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. Buckle up, hit that like button, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is Dua Lipa and why Dua Lipa is over party was trending today. And I know, you're thinking, oh no, what did she do? Did she hit a homeless child who is holding a homeless puppy who suffers from depression down a cliff? An act that was for some reason the first thing came to my mind. I don't understand my brain. No, rather it was because of this video. So I can't actually show the video, but I shall describe it to you. The video was reportedly posted to Lizzo's Instagram story. Reportedly after her 3 Grammy wins, Lizzo rented out the entire Crazy Girl strip club in LA. Right, it was an after party, and in the video you see Dua Lipa having some dollars and then throwing and placing said dollars on two strippers taking what God, their mama, and possibly a well-qualified surgeon gave them. Following this clip going up, I know this is gonna be shocking. Some people were angry about a thing posted on the internet. Some condemning the stars, saying that they were sexualizing women, that it was anti-feminist. This because a number of people said that they were treating these women like objects. But then on the other side of this, as the outrage grew, so did just a swelling of support and defense. People saying, if anything, it is feminist. She's supporting other women. Many also calling out the other criticisms as a double standard, since tons of men in the industry often visit strip clubs and rarely ever face backlash for it. And as far as my opinion on this, I wish that I had so little going on in my life and so little stress in my life that I could get so enraged by a clip like this. My personal take on this is that there's nothing wrong in this video. It is a woman supporting other women. Sex work is real work. And I say that not wanting to paint everything with a broad brush, right? Understanding that not every situation is equal to another. In some instances, things may be predatory, exploitative, but on the other hand, right? If a woman wants to utilize her body, it's hers. But hey, that last part's my opinion. So if you agree, you disagree, whatever, I'd love to know your thoughts on this. And then let's talk about Ruby Torres. So back in 2014, before starting cancer treatment, Ruby decides that she's going to get her eggs fertilized and frozen. And while at the fertility clinic, she and her then boyfriend, John Terrell, they signed this agreement. An agreement at the fertility clinic that reportedly says, if they split up, the embryos could either be donated to another couple or used by one of them to have children, but only with the express written consent of both parties. So the two of them sign this. Several days later, they get married. Right, so Ruby goes through the process, in vitro fertilization, they freeze her body. Embryos. Then, reportedly, Torres's chemotherapy caused a significant drop in her reproductive function, and the situation became a big issue because in 2017, the two ended up getting divorced. Right, and so after that, you have Ruby who wants to keep the embryos, and on the other side, you have her ex-husband who says, no, I don't want to be the father of her kids. Those should be donated. What ended up happening is a family court ruled in the favor of the ex-husband, saying his, quote, right to not be compelled to be a parent outweighs Ruby's right to procreate and desire to have a biologically related child. But then we saw an appeals court overturn that ruling. But now what we're seeing is that the Arizona Supreme Court has once again ruled in the favor of the ex-husband. Now, the thing that makes the situation even muddier, because I think a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on this, there is actually a law in the state of Arizona that is specifically targeted towards this situation. It's a 2018 law that requires the courts to give viable embryos from divorced couples to the parent who wants a child going forward. Reportedly, that statute releases the partner who doesn't want to procreate from any obligations. But the thing is, that law didn't exist when Ruby's case began. Right, so part of the argument on the other side is that Terrell could have been forced to pay child support. But also, you had his attorney arguing, when parties agree ahead of time what to do with their embryos, we think courts should respect those agreements and enforce those contracts. No one should be forced to become a parent against their wishes. And ultimately, that's where we are here, and I would really love to know your thoughts around this. Right, what do you think should happen? Do you think the Arizona Supreme Court got it right, or no, the appeals court got it right? Why not? Any and all thoughts I'd love to see in those comments down below. Then, kind of quickly, I want to talk about the coronavirus again, but I also want to do so in a way that doesn't cause panic. Is obviously when we see and we talk about the news of, hey, there's this new strain of a virus. Right. As of this morning, there are over 4,500 cases in China, 106 deaths. That seems scary. It is scary. You know, this week you had the CDC announcing a level 3 travel warning regarding China. Right, suggesting avoiding all non-essential trips. But if you're in the United States, right now in the States, there have been 5 reported cases, no deaths as of recording this video. But the thing is, the thing that more people need to be concerned about is the flu. Right, just in the United States so far this flu season, 15 million people have gotten the flu and over 8,200 people have died from the flu. So I guess, one, get your flu shot if you haven't gotten it already. And two, while there is an understandable concern about, you know, this new strain of coronavirus, we need to kind of remember, oh wait, let's be careful, let's be cautious, but let's try to not get swept up in this thing that's actually a lot less scary for us right now than a thing that's killing thousands of people as we speak. Also, as I finished that last sentence, I realized I just did a horrible job of trying to not cause more panic. I realized I kind of just was like, you think that fire over there is scary because it could spread over here? What about the fire in your backyard? But also, in my defense, it is shining a light on a scary situation that you can do something about right now. But I guess the main point of this story is you're welcome and I'm sorry. And then let's talk about Israel, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, and the United States. Now, the last time we talked about Netanyahu was back in November when Israel's Attorney General announced that he was indicting the Prime Minister on bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. This marking the first time in Israel's history that a sitting prime minister had been indicted. Right, and these charges stemmed from three cases. One of the cases alleges that he illegally accepted $264,000 worth of gifts from tycoons in exchange for lobbying, and the two other cases claim that he traded policy favors in exchange for positive news coverage from an Israeli newspaper and a website. Now, Netanyahu has long denied the charges, calling them fake news and a politically motivated witch hunt by the left and the media, even going as far as calling the indictments against him an attempted coup. And so this was a massive deal, and it also came at a time when Israel's political system was kind of a, I think the technical term is shit show, with the country scrambling to prevent its third election in less than a year. And to oversimplify something we've talked about in depth, you know, the first election was back in April of 2019. Netanyahu's Likud party and the opposition leader Benny Gantz's blue and white party each won 35 seats in Israel's 120-seat parliament. Neither had a majority. Netanyahu was given the chance to form a coalition that could give them a majority, but was unable to do so. And there, instead of letting Gantz try to form a coalition, which honestly would have failed, he pushed through a bill that dissolved parliament and set new elections for September. There we see Gantz's party win 33 seats, Netanyahu's win 32. There, Netanyahu's given a chance to form a coalition again, and again he fails. This time Gantz is also given a chance, but he fails. And when we last left this story, Israel had just 21 days to get some kind of majority, and to no one's surprise, that deadline expired on December 11th, officially triggering the third national election this year, which is set now for March 2nd. So, while all this political chaos is bad for Israel, it's actually not so bad for Netanyahu. Right? And that's because Netanyahu, as prime minister, isn't legally required to step down, even though he is now indicted, a privilege that is notably not given to lower-level ministers. With the election set for March, Netanyahu is still prime minister until he steps down or another is chosen, and so kind of until then, he's pulling all the stops to stay in power. Right? Notably, on January 1st, Netanyahu asked parliament to grant him immunity. And this would do two things. First of all, it would buy him some time because the attorney general could not go forward with the trial proceedings against Netanyahu until his request for immunity was either granted or denied. And second, if he was granted immunity, it would let him avoid prosecution while he remains in office. But the flaw in this plan is Netanyahu did not have enough support in parliament to get an immunity deal. And so with Israel's parliament set to vote on forming the immunity committee to hear his case today, Netanyahu announced that he was withdrawing his immunity plea early this morning. Now this might seem like a concession, but it was actually a very calculated move for two main reasons. First is the fact that he now doesn't have to suffer the public humiliation of parliament denying him immunity. Instead, he can just accuse parliament of being unfair, which he did. And two, pending a few things, this might actually afford him the opportunity to shape the public narrative. And I say that because today he is in Washington, he met with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is announcing his peace plan, which actually happened as I was recording this video. Right, that Middle East peace plan that people have been talking about, there's been a lot of build up to, even though the Palestinians reportedly were not part of the drafting process. But first, to kind of touch on this being used as a way for Netanyahu to change the focus, we did actually see him today kind of going after parliament saying, quote, instead of understanding the greatness of the hour and rising above political consideration, they continue to engage in cheap politics that are damaging to this decisive moment in the history of the country. And actually, right after Netanyahu's announcement, Israel's attorney general formally indicted him in court. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. As of recording this video, a date for that first hearing has not been set. Right, so there's the possibility that it could happen before or after the election. Right, and as I said, as I was recording, Trump officially rolled out the Middle East peace plan. And under the plan, Israel would be given sovereignty over much of the disputed West Bank settlements that have created so much conflict with the Palestinians. Meanwhile, the Palestinians would be offered a path to statehood if they agreed to meet a series of goals outlined under the plan. And according to a report about a fact sheet released by the White House, Israel agreed to a four-year land freeze, suggesting Israel would halt the construction of new settlements during the four-year period that Palestinians have to comply with administration demands for a separate state. Now, many experts have been pointing out that the plan gives Israel much of what it's been asking for years, while asking Palestinians to give up a lot of territorial concession. But in his announcement, Trump said the plan would be good for Palestinians.
My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides, a realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security. Today, Israel has taken a giant step toward peace. I want this deal to be a great deal for the Palestinians. It has to be. Today's agreement is a historic opportunity for the Palestinians to finally achieve an independent state of their very own. After 70 years of little progress, this could be the last opportunity they will ever have.
Now, Palestine, for its part, rejected the deal before it was even formally announced. You know, as I mentioned, that was not unexpected. Palestinian officials were not involved in the drafting of the plan at all, which was developed largely by Jared Kushner. Also, you have things like, in a statement, the president of the Palestinian Authority said that Jerusalem is not for sale, all of our rights are not for sale, adding that Trump's deal will not pass. In fact, Palestinian representative leaders have been boycotting any dealings with the Trump administration. But as far as the Israeli leaders who met with Trump, there's not really any divide there. Both Netanyahu and Gantz have said that they support the plan, and the Trump administration is waiting to see if other Middle Eastern countries also support it. But Bibi doesn't seem like he wants to wait to see if others support the plan. Speaking to reporters this afternoon, he said that he plans to move forward with annexing the areas of the West Bank and Jordan Valley outlined in Trump's plan as Israeli territory. This would be a huge deal because many consider that land to be legally owned by Palestinians, and as a result believe that the annexation would be illegal under international law. So the fact that Netanyahu is already going ahead with this part of Trump's plan and not using it as a jumping off point for discussion could indicate how this will go moving forward. But ultimately, that is where we are now, and it's gonna be very interesting to see what happens from here. And I mean that both with the peace plan, as well as the Israeli elections, also what happens with Netanyahu. We'll have to wait and see, but of course, like with everything we talk about, I'd love to know your thoughts on this. And that is where I'm going to end today's show. Thank you again for watching my little daily news show. I appreciate having you. Also, if you're looking for more to watch after this, maybe you missed yesterday's show, or you wanna catch today's brand new Rogue Rocket video, you can click or tap right there to watch either of those right now. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.